Blog Talk Radio.
About a very hot topic. This is Professor Applewhite, and I'm wishing you the best this morning. I'm wishing you a very happy day, even though we live in a world where there's so many problems. There's also lots of good things happening. Blessings are happening at the same time that issues are happening. Where's the balance? The balance is within you. The way that you perceive your world. So I choose, and I hope you join me, I choose to see the world as an optimist. And I know that we have a lot of people that have called into the show, listeners that go into our chat room. By the way, our chat room is open now. So if you choose to communicate with me through chat, that's fine. But I want to let you know that I have to believe. You see, I have to believe because I have to face the very students that we are saying they have no future. Whenever we say that it's hopeless, we're telling them they have no future. Whenever we blame them for the problems of our society and don't take on the responsibility ourselves as the adult learner. Now, I said that. And I really mean adult learners, because we are all, again, students and teachers. And so as adult learners, we become responsible for passing a torch of wisdom, strength, courage. We become responsible for looking at solutions, looking for solutions, and discussing them. Not ignoring the problems, but looking more to the solution. So I welcome our guest this morning. Good morning. This is Professor Applewhite. How are you from the 503 area?
Well, good morning. My name is Dr. Jamila Williams, and I am definitely excited to be on your call this morning and to learn as I listen from the other people that are on the line and to just be able to take in and to be able to contribute. So that's going to be exciting for me. So thank you for allowing me to be a part of this call this morning.
Thank you, Dr. Jamila. We are so grateful for you joining us. We know that you are, I would say, a standout figure now in higher education.
Wow,
you are. You are going to rock the world if you haven't already. You have already started to rock the world. And we hope that you have something to contribute this morning. I especially am concerned about what's happening in higher education, because when we look at the lower grades, the K through 12 arena, we come up with different laws and different rules about how we're supposed to communicate what's going on with a student. I mean, we have IEPs and privacy acts to protect students. But something happens, there's this gray area that happens when we move into higher education about how much we're supposed to tell, how much we're supposed to ask, especially when we're talking about the violence that's happening in today's world and people blaming that are not only students, but students with diagnosed with mental illness. And I'll tell you, I believe, and I agree that I know some of our listeners agree because of some of the feedback that I'm getting, is that there's something wrong with that formula. Blame, period, doesn't exist. It can't exist in this arena because the blame takes us backwards. So does this feeling of mental illness and students and thinking that that's in some way there's a correlation, a high correlation between students with mental illness and increased violence. I have to say that I believe somewhere in our discussion this morning and in discussions to follow, that we're going to stop this blaming violence on the mentally ill student, all the shootings and the killings that are increasing, and we're going to start looking at broken mental health systems, broken educational systems, that maybe we need to take a look a little deeper into what's happening there and some of the laws that, I'll say, protect, but they don't serve totally what we need them to. Now, for a minute, I'm going to just hang in there with me while I do this. I'm going to just go over, because a lot of our listeners out there are saying, well, why is it that these laws exist, and what are these laws? Because a lot of people are not even familiar with what the laws are out there. First off, listeners, we've got the HIPAA law, okay? And that HIPAA law exists for everyone. All of these laws exist for everyone. But HIPAA, without getting too technical on it, you probably have heard it referenced. You probably signed some paperwork somewhere in your doctor's office about it. But it's your protection, and it's a protection of your health information and mental health information. So what it says is that mental health providers and other people that are involved in any way with your legal information or any kind of consultation that you've even had about your health, your mental health, especially with HIV and AIDS, things that cause major stereotypes, negative stereotypes in our society, become real big issues with HIPAA. And so HIPAA laws are there to protect. Now, where that falls into that fine line between whether a doctor, a therapist, a counselor, school counselor should step over those guidelines and warn someone or at least imply some way that a student is in need becomes a very gray area. And so we'll come back to you, Doctor, to talk a little bit more about that. One more thing I want to bring out. So I know a lot of our listeners are students, so they take all this stuff down. Okay, so write down the HIPAA and then write down FERPA, which is the Family Education Rights and Protection and Privacy Act. This is another law that protects the student. And so parents and students put their trust in this law that their educational records will not be shared. But it's more than educational records. It's their private information, period, across the board. It's a civil rights issue. It's a protection, again. It's a safeguard. But is it legitimate? And should it be used in all cases, even when we know someone is prone to violence, prone to doing something that might hurt other people? It's a very, very tough line when we talk about students shooting and killing and whether or not we need to protect their confidentiality. I'm not going to get into all of the different news articles that are out there today. I think everybody's pretty aware of how the increase has been happening since basically the Columbine. And this was my dissertation material, as a matter of fact, of the increase in violence. So, Doctor, would you please tell us a little bit about your practice first, and then I would like you to tell our listeners how to get in touch with you and what you're doing.
Well, you know, Professor Applewhite, as I was listening to you, it really rang home for me. I was pre-K through eighth grade teacher and principal, and I thought about a lot of the instances where we did have children that had special needs, and there was information that as the principal that I was privy to in trying to determine what information needs to be shared with the classroom teacher as well as maybe the PE teacher and different things like that, because with those laws that you talked about, it's more of on that need-to-know basis. But on the other hand, some of the teachers, maybe a teacher that was just past that student in the hall, if they were unaware of some special triggers that may set that student off, or this is the time of year that something tragic happened in their life, so this would not be a good time to approach them or something like that, well, you can't share that knowledge with everyone. But then I would see situations where a teacher unknowing would say or do something, and it would set the student off, and they're wondering what happened. So being able to decipher how to work through those laws without infringing on the right, but also protecting all the people around, that is very challenging. And I totally agree with you on that. You know, when you're talking about the violence issue, one of the things that I always would talk with my teachers and my students about is what they're seeing on TV and on the movies and on video games, because that desensitizes them to violence. I mean, you can play those video games where you're shooting up and killing all these people, and then you press reset and everybody's back to life again. And the same with the cartoon.
And you know, the cartoon industry, we talked about this years ago. I don't want to age myself, but it's been a long time. I don't know if you remember an experimental design by Albert Bandura. And Bandura's Bobo doll, I believe it was. And what happened with that experiment is that he had a child watch an adult authoritative figure beat up on a doll, very tall, you know, like a rubber doll. And the aggression that the adult showed was what they found the child duplicated when the child was in the same room again with the Bobo doll and just the child. Duplicated the same identical facial expressions, gestures, and whatever. So this has been an ongoing issue about the copying, the duplication, the mirroring of watching people. Not just with violent attitudes or violence that we see that doesn't have an end result of them bouncing back, but even when, like you said, in the video games they bounce back, but even when they don't, we don't see the empathy going out in our world today about that.
I totally agree.
Yeah. We just push so hard on the actual bang bang shoot 'em up, now even more than in the 50s and 60s, and so we're getting into this really, I want to say scary, but it is scary. Now, let's just be real, it's scary, you know. And how do we address it? We address it by looking at the factor that it's not the student necessarily that is the problem. It is the factor that we all, as a society, have to pull together and look at our mental health and education systems and find out how we can do more, number one, as the intervention right now, to share information that is valuable. I think we have some very responsible people in our field that can share information in a responsible way.
Yeah.
I think what's happened is that because of a few instances, we've gone a little on the deep end of being a little overprotective, which has caused so much.
Yes, I definitely agree with you. And again, we're talking about that fine line of how much is too much and what do you do and how do you protect the rights and the privacy, yet expose the information to the needed people. So I am totally in agreement with what you were saying. And just giving you asked a little bit about my background. I was a classroom teacher from pre-K through fifth grade for 22 years, and then I went into administration at middle school. I was in Oregon, and so I was our 6th, 7th, and 8th graders. And then I moved into administration and as a principal, and I was a principal of a pre-K through 8th grade school. And so going through those various levels, I mean, that was definitely interesting, watching the progression and the development of your innocent 4-year-old up through your 8th grader who's ready to go on to high school. And through my third... Go ahead.
Go ahead. Oh, no, no. I'm listening to you. Disagreeing.
Oh, oh yes. And so through my 30-year experience, I watched, especially the 4-year-olds, that initially when I started teaching, they came in all innocent and just full of wonderment and ready to grow and learn, to by the end, before I retired, being able to see those 4-year-olds where some of them were coming in with anger issues and violence issues. And I looked at the babies, and when I first started teaching, I would look at the kids, and I'm like, as young as you are, what in the world could you have went through that make you so angry? By the end of my career, I stopped answering that. I stopped asking that because I was learning about their home life and about what they were going through and what they were seeing and the drugs and the violence in the household. And I no longer asked what in the world were, you know, could have made them so angry, because I was able to see some of that. A prime example, we're talking about children with special needs, and I had one of my students who was a special ed student just angry. And he would come in some days and just violent, and his words and his temperament. I mean, you could just look at him and see the anger. And I found out, Sue, as that year progressed, he was being held down on the floor by his mother as his stepfather was beating him. And so then, you know, why was he so violent? Because that's what he was experiencing.
Yes.
And so then how do you help a situation like that? How do you train the parents? Or take the child from, you know, and you hate to say see children taken away from a home and put into the system. But on the other hand, until that parent is educated, counseled, or whatever, that they're becoming a good environment for the child, you need to do what you need to do. And so there is a lot of things that goes on in the life of the younger children that is setting them up. And so you're talking about in higher ed, I mean, if the needs have not been addressed in that pre-K through high school age, by the time they become adult learners, I mean, it is ingrained in them. And so then you're going to have to look at different tactics of counseling and therapy and work, helping them to work through those childhood issues.
You know, when if we went back right now and looked at all the young men and women that have subjected themselves, and I'm not just talking about the ones who make the evening news, because the factor of violence in our schools has been going on long before even Columbine, and consistently in disadvantaged communities, which, you know, I mean, the news seems to overlook that fact. I don't know if it's because we're talking about poor communities. I'm certainly cannot ignore racial disparity. I cannot ignore that. But I also cannot ignore the fact that maybe the numbers aren't high enough. But I can tell you that in disadvantaged communities around this country and other countries, it is so prevalent that every day there is someone dying as a result of a shooting, some kind of violence, or even suicidal tendencies because of bullying. And while I'm speaking of bullying, I want to make sure that I give the listeners a lifeline to call, just in case you are dealing with any kind of bullying or violent acts that you may be concerned about. There's some information out there that you might be able to hold on, you know, to hold in your resources. And it's very simple. It's just called stopbullying.gov. Very simple, okay? But I just wanted to add that in, because what we're finding is that all of the bullying, all of the violence, all of the things that are happening with the adult learner, when we go back in their history, we are going to find those instances that you just spoke about the young man being held down. We're going to find that in their background. As a psychologist, I know that.
Yes.
Okay? I look back and when I speak to students now, everything is pending, and not to get Freudian on us, okay, but the bottom line is that when we look back on childhood issues, we can see how that has truly built up not only a resistance to violence and a resistance to empathy in our society, but also this ongoing aggression that we feel. And you know
that
what?
That is true.
Dr. Williams, I'll tell you something. I can't even begin to fathom how parents can be so cruel. And I hear this a lot. I can't believe this happened. But then for years I heard that, and then I started to step back a little bit, like you did. You said you stopped asking. Well,
mm-hmm.
I stopped asking for a minute, and I started looking at the parents. And I said, you know what? We don't have enough empathy for the parents because they were children. And here they are raising children and haven't even addressed their own issues of aggression and violence. So where do we
and
go back
so
to? How do
true.
We do this? So let's go.
Yeah,
we can't go backwards. There's nothing we can do. God grant us the serenity to accept the things that we can change, the courage to change the things that we can, and the serenity to accept what we cannot change, right? So
exactly.
We need to go forward. We need to look at today, the present moment of what we're doing right now on this radio broadcast, going out to hopefully 30,000 listeners. Bless you all for tuning into the show when you do. But hopefully you can spread the word that the issue is not so much that we need to look at the student. The issue is not so much that we continue this blaming, but that we need to look within our own systems and within our own laws and see how we can do something that's called prevention instead of this intervention. Because intervention means that something's already happened to make us stand up and look at it. If we
and
still
that
deal
is
with,
so true.
Yeah, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, see, I know that, you know, what you were talking about with the parents, because I had taught all of my 30 years in education was in the inner city areas, inner city schools. And in fact, the school I was a principal of was the highest poverty school in our district.
Oh,
and
wow.
The good thing about my experience all being in that same community, even though at different schools, is that by the time I was a principal, a lot of my students, their parents had been my students in the past. And so I knew their parents when they were children, and I knew some of the things that they went through. So when
wow.
I went to deal with their children, I knew that beginning. I knew that what was going on. And, you know, they were children raising children. And so I was able to talk to the parents because they already saw me as someone they could trust from being their teacher. And I was able to really sit down and talk with them on maybe a different level than just
mm-hmm.
principal parents. But to see through, and you're right, a lot of the parents, they had not totally healed from the issues that they were dealing with as children.
Mm-hmm.
And they were doing the same thing to their children. So being able to sit down and say, you know, wait now, I know that when you were in school, this happened, that happened, but how can we make it better for your child? How can we
right.
intervene and change the situation so that your child does not follow the same path that you did? And
mm-hmm.
in several of the cases, I was able to kind of help the parent to see, okay, I better do something different. Otherwise, my child is going to be just like me, and I don't want that. I want better for them.
Right.
So it is very important to look at the parent and their interaction with the children, not in a blaming mode.
Right, right.
But, you know, we don't blame the parent for how they are, but in a way of how can we help them to do a better job, a different job, improve on, increase what they're doing now. Because a lot of
mm-hmm.
them, parents wanted to do well. They wanted to do it differently. They may just not have known.
Mm-hmm.
So being able to assist them to be the parents that they want to be, that their child needs, I think is very important. So you are definitely right on with that, looking at parents as well. But not again, not in a blaming mode, but in a supportive
right.
mode.
Now, we have about 6 minutes left on the show this morning, and what I wanted to do is we've shared some great information out there, but I want to know more about this Protect Our Kids program that you're advocating. Tell us a little bit about this.
Well, the program is a setup so that parents can become more aware into what their children are doing. So it's a online system that shows their Facebook, MySpace, even can be connected to the Android cell phone so that parents will be able to see what's going on in their child's life. And not as a snoopy way, but as a helpful way. So that if your child has more, is getting more friends on Facebook, say, and you're wanting to see who they are, you know, they help your child to read through and say, okay, this person may not be who they say they are. You know, he may say that he's a 18-year-old college student or high school student, but in essence, he could be a 35-year-old man. So,
but Mom, you're snooping on me. But Mom, you're snooping on me. You know, I mean, that's the response that most young people are going to give. I mean,
well, the good thing, and then you're right, you're right. But that gives the opportunity of the parent and the child to be able to sit down and the parent to say, you know, I'm not really trying to snoop on you, but I do love you and I want to help you.
There you go.
And as I'm helping you to learn better skills on online, how, because, you know, online, even though we say it's been around for a long time, but these predators are really getting slick at how they're approaching the youth of today.
Oh, yeah.
And so being able to sit down and working together with your child and to be able to see what's going on. So if you have that kind of conversation and that you're able to just start them looking, and even maybe it's like, okay, well, I'm only going to look once a week.
Mm-hmm.
But, it, you know, however the parent and the child sets that up. A prime example of, like, with my daughter and my granddaughter, and my daughter, my granddaughter is allowed to have a diary, but she knows that Mom has the right to read it at any time. Now, does my daughter read it every day? No. But at any moment, she could. And so just kind of helping my granddaughter to be aware of the fact that, well, Mom could read it, so let me think about what I'm doing and as I'm writing and be more aware of what's going on in my life and who I'm associating with and who's speaking into my life. Because
right.
we really need to know who is speaking into our children's life.
That's right. That's
and
right.
so the way the program works, it just it gets that conversation going between parent and child, and it also gets that communication going and the information to the parents to be alerted. And in case some, your child could be being bullied. And a lot of times kids that are being bullied won't ask for help, but they want help.
And this is very true for the young adult who may be developmentally delayed. If you're dealing, if you're a parent and you're dealing with a young adult who is very, very vulnerable to approaches from other people, you need to be aware of that without coming on as a snooper.
Exactly.
We have to understand, and we'll have to cover this on another show because of the time limitations, but we have to understand that the colleges, if your son or daughter is going to a college, that you do not have the right to ask for information from the college, but you can always ask your son or daughter designed for you to have access to their information. So in that same light, you need to ask them and be sure that they're okay with you having access. And like Dr. Jamila Williams is bringing out, that is a way to open up the door to communication between parents and their loved ones. And also, when the parent is not available or in concurrently with the parent, the teacher becomes a surrogate parent. And so the teachers, instructors, I don't care what level you're at, even if you're in higher education, we do become students and teachers, all of us. And so we need to take a full responsibility for that. And before I leave you and close the show, because I hope you come back again, I want to talk to you more about this, the travel agency that you're doing. And we compliment you on this. If any of you are interested, Dr. Jamila Williams also owns a JGS travel agency. Is that right?
Yes, it is. JGSTravel.biz.
Dot what? Dot
B-I-Z dot biz.
Dot biz, okay. So she's also available to book your next trip. So we thank you so much, and that's what it's all about, networking for each other and supporting each other. I hope to speak with you soon, okay?
Well, thank you, and I've enjoyed being on this show and having the opportunity to share information and to talk with you, and I thank you and all the viewers or listeners for allowing me to be a part of the show today. Thank you.
Thank you so much. thank you for joining our show this morning.
Well, thank
Much
you.
Love and peace to all of you. And as we close this morning with Wes Ricks from Two Worlds. And we thank all of our listeners out there, our producer, Malvina Sullivan, on vacation, but she will be back joining us soon. Thank you, Malvina.
You're welcome.